Some people ask me, what is the progress of your group? And sometimes some members of this group ask me, how far have I progressed, or have we progressed? This very important question depends on two things. A, the intensity of your effort, and B, the point in time. You will understand the intensity of your efforts. But you would like to know how this point in time comes in your way. It may be that some of you may have done something in your previous life or lives, and some of you may be beginning now in this life. But in both the cases, the important point is the intensity of your efforts. Those who have been coming here for at least 1 year, can you tell, honestly, can you tell me that in 365 days you have not missed one day? So the intensity of effort is gone. If you ask me, and I'll tell you honestly, whether I have missed one day in the last 50 years, I will say no. You see, intensity of effort means, unless that comes from you, this book is helpless and hopeless for you. The point in time will depend upon the intensity of your efforts. Any half-hearted, lukewarm effort is considered no effort. So even if you have begun in this life for the last few years, the count is zero. You understand? The count is zero. So before I touch this book, I would like to know whether the intensity of effort will come out or not. There is the Gita, and there is the Yoga Sutra. These two books, I so much venerate it, I will think 10 times before I pick them up. Because I know that when I pick them up, how I will go through them. And unless I have not built up the intensity in me, I will not even touch these books. They are very vital. The Gita and the Yoga Sutra, they are very vital. Reading them has no meaning. They demand from you total service, total. So after many years I have decided to pick up this book and go along with you. I want that seriousness from you when we go along. From today, there will be no notes. You have to make your own notes. give sufficient attention so that when you come again, you have not forgotten what I have told you. So with this introduction, we shall begin. I will tell you one more thing. If my friend here, Brahmananda, were to pick up the slokas or the sutras, he might need a whole day before he will be through with one or two sutras. He has so much to explain, so much for you to understand. Of course, compared to him, I am nowhere. I am a beginner. And so we shall do what we can on our level. I hope you have got this book, all of you. Here I have made it clear that for the sake of translation, I will take up the translation of any scale. For Yoga Sutra, scholars are not required. For Yoga Sutra, people who have practiced, who have experienced, are called for. So we shall take somewhat loose translation of Alice Bailey and continue. Let us open the introduction. What does it say? In his teachings, said Patanjali, has emphasized three major disciplines of yoga abhyasa: self-restraint, self-examination, self-surrender. The restraint, or the word austerity, should not be taken in its literary sense. We do not follow methods of control. Neither we strictly follow austerities as the word means. But between the two words, we find a middle way, and that is, our life we live should be such that without effort, we can go along the path freely. That is meant by restraint and austerity. The second is self-study or self-examination. I have given you earlier the method whereby during the day a half a dozen times you stop suddenly and see what you are thinking. What are the thoughts that are going through your mind? If you check yourself 5-10 times, what are those predominating thoughts? Are you on the level of ego? You're thinking about yourself. Or are you thinking about the past? Or are you confident about the future? Or has the past taken away all the fights from you? when you examine this torch 5-10 times a day and every day, you see your subconscious picture. When you look yourself into the mirror, you don't see yourself, because yourself is in the subconscious. This is not yourself. You can powder and you can apply lipstick and do what you like. That is not you when you look into the mirror. But 5-10 times a day, if you stop suddenly and think, what is the thought that is running through my mind? And if you analyze that over a few period of 2, 3, 4 weeks, then you see yourself as your subconscious is. That is called self-study. And this is very important. For unless you know your subconscious, you are living in the fool's paradise. You might be following some self-hypnosis, self-suggestions, and you might say, day by day I'm getting better and better. All the things you could do on the surface. But what you are is your subconscious. So a self-study of yourself, subconscious, is very important. That has to be done. And 5-10 times a day, continuously daily, for a period. Say if you do it for 3, 4, 5 weeks, you will get some idea of your subconscious. When you get the idea of your subconscious, if you have been honest with yourself, 99% you will get a rude shock, because you are not you. Then the third, self-surrender. The word is a very small common word, self-surrender. It is one of the most difficult things to do. Surrender in what manner? Surrender to whom? In what manner is very important. You are not surrendering because you are a failure. You are not surrendering because you are a sinner. Yoga Vyasa does not accept these words. You are neither a failure nor a sinner. If at the age of 80 you wish to turn back, Yoga Abhyas welcomes you. And in Yoga Abhyas there is no word for sin, papa. It has come much, much later. Added by whom, I don't know. But the original text have nowhere the word papa. So, forget that you are a sinner. Forget that you are a failure. So with hope, come forward to surrender. And you will surrender to whom? Not to a fool like myself. You should surrender to your own spiritual self. These are the first three tottering steps you will take on the path. In Yoga Vyasa, there are only two words on which the whole structure stands. Only two words. One is avidya. One is avidya, ignorance. And the other is? And the other is memory. Without these two words, there is nothing in the whole universe. Think of anything existing without these two words. The entire yoga vyasa is based on these two words. Avidya, that is ignorance, and memory. These are the two words. If you think that by going to college, school, attending a lot of philosophy or whatnot, reading many books, going to many places, you will bring an end to your avidya, you are making a very big mistake. Because the more you learn, avidya will grow with it instead of lessening. And the second word is memory. Just as you cannot cut yourself off from your own shadow, you can't cut yourself from your memory. It is irrelevant whether that memory is good or bad or otherwise. Therefore, how shall I end my avidya? And how shall I take control of my memory? Are the two very, very important words, not only words, but obstacles. They are real obstacles in the path. You ask me, when is avidya set aside? That would be a natural question to ask. When will I be able to set avidya aside? The answer is connected to the second word. When you set aside your memory, you set aside your avidya. You get some idea how difficult is the whole process. If you can't set aside memory, you can't set aside your avidya. And if you can set aside your avidya, you can set aside your memory. Those who can do this are known as yogis. And those who can't do it are we ourselves here, gathered together here. We have just mentioned earlier self-surrender. Self-surrender to whom? Your own spiritual self or divine fragment or soul or atma, whatever you might call it. Here comes the major difficulty. One man went to his master and said, "Sir, I'm tired, I can't control my mind." And the master said, "Bring your mind to me, I will do it for you." And he couldn't find his mind. In the same way, when you like to surrender to your spiritual self, you won't find it. Again the paradox, whom to surrender? If I can't find myself, my spiritual self, to whom will I surrender? To vacuum. From the this question arises Yoga Sutra. It says, well, if you are sincere in surrendering, I will show you your spiritual self. That is how the sutras are. If you sincerely want to surrender, I will show you this your own spiritual self. This is how the Yoga Sutras are based. And as in the 12th chapter of the Gita, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, well, Arjuna, you do this, 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 and you will be on your way to progress to come towards me. Then he says, well, if you can't do this, 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 then do this, this, this. And he goes on saying that. Finally says, well, if you can't do anything, just come to me and sit and say, oh Krishna, that will be enough. But then you will say, oh Krishna, you are on the verge of surrender. You are on the verge of surrender, truly. And if you can surrender truly, you don't need self-study, you don't have to think of memory, you don't have to think of avidya, because you are surrendering before all wisdom. You get my point? The Gita, the Upanishads, they are fascinating reading. You can read again and again and again. But when it comes to achieving, you don't do a thing. When it comes to achieving, you can't. Because the great obstacle in your first step is your mind. And as I just said, you can't bring your mind to me because you can't find it. That is the first obstacle, your own mind. And if you cannot control your own mind, how will you go forward? So, the master tells the disciple, forget your mind. It is itself an obstacle. Why are you keen on controlling your mind? Set it aside. So ignorance, memory, mind, they want to set it aside. Whatever I have been telling you in the last few minutes, Lord Buddha said in one sentence, Bhikshu, empty the boat. Whatever rubbish you have got inside, empty the boat. Bhikshu, empty the boat. Forget about memory, forget about self-surrender, forget about everything. Empty the boat first. Look, our precious passions, our precious emotions, our precious mental gymnastics, our precious revenge, sweet revenge, we cannot give up this. How can we empty the boat? Understand? Why? It is called upon you to empty your boat. Why should you empty your boat? Whatever the precious possessions you may have, worthless maybe. Because two things cannot occupy the same place at the same time. If you want your possessions, your spiritual self will say, I'll come later. you have the choice now. Will you have your spiritual, own spiritual self or your possessions? You know Mount Vesuvius that destroyed the Roman city? One rich Roman, because he had so much gold, he asked his four servants to carry a stretcher and just covered over with gold. And he was running away from his palace because Vesuvius was bursting fiercely. Halfway down the road, he found his son badly injured and lying on the ground. You know what it is? He asked those four bearers to empty the stretcher, all the gold, and put his son on. The choice is this: your spiritual son or your worthless possessions, however sweet they may be to you. Would you be willing to do like this as the great Roman did? It is up to you. But if you can do that, we can go together. Emptied my stretcher. I'm waiting for you to empty your stretchers and throw the gold away or throw the rubbish away or whatever you have. Okay? You like to do it? Then we'll go together. Today's science, modern science of course, seems to agree with the ancient masters that this is not the only area of intelligence. In every cell there is intelligence. If your spiritual self feels you from top of the head to bottom to the toe of your foot, where is the question of intelligence? Any here, there or anywhere? What I wish to tell you is that the word memory that I gave you and the word avidya I gave you is in every cell. So you will have to empty every cell. And the total of all your cells will be your boat. Which, as Buddha says, empty your boat. And then, your spiritual self will burst out in every cell of your body. And that is all that the Yoga Sutra wants to do to any one of you, all of you. But, as I have said, in these few minutes, the demand is from you and nothing less. Page 207. other page?
Page 207. We'll begin sutra by sutra. Book 1, Sutra 1. It says, now we shall begin the revised instructions in the science of union. We shall begin what? Instructions in the science of union. Union with whom? Union with what? It is union of A, of brain to mind, B, of physical body to astral body, C, memory to avidya, D, to your conscious outer self with your inner spiritual self. So when we begin the science of union, we will have to think of all these different types of union. Normally, people take one meaning out of it, and that is the union of this outer physical covering with the inner spiritual self. That comes later. First comes the most important union is A, the understanding of the word brain and the understanding of the word mind, and how the two can be profitably brought together. They are together. They are together, but not profitably together. They are together to be obstruction to each other, as we are today. They have to come together in a profitable manner. Why? Because each has a part to play. The brain has a part to play and mind has a part to play. Normally, all over the world, and due to science giving all importance to brain, we have given the word mind a synonymous meaning of brain. We have never considered the word mind as separate from brain. The one main reason is, as I told you a little earlier, science cannot find mind just as you and I can't find our mind. If we don't find it, or if we don't know it, or if we say it doesn't exist, it does not mean that it doesn't exist. You understand me? By our saying no, that there is not a thing like mine, it will not cease to exist. Just as all the million, billion people on this earth would say there is nothing like God, and God will not cease to exist, because all of us would say there is nothing like God. There is a thing like mine. And that beautiful thing like mine that most precious thing like mine poorest or the richest has got an equal proportion. God has no bias for the rich or the poor, for the educated or the ignorant, for the healthy or the sick. He has given this precious mind to all. And it's a part of the divine mind. What is its purpose? When there is darkness in the brain, when there is confusion in the brain, when there is no ultimate conclusion in the brain, if it is oscillating between yes and no, the mind shows light and the brain comes to conclusion. Because in showing light, the mind has spoken inaudibly to the brain. And yet, you and I can't find mind. And the most advanced scientists think there is nothing like mind. There is no world like mind. Or if there is nothing, a substance called mind, even today, we would have remained as primitive as 4 million years ago we were primitive. We have come to this state, from that primitive state, because once in a while, here, there, somebody's brain has followed the infinite mind of God. Whether that somebody is a prophet, whether that somebody is a scientist, whether that somebody is an inventor, somebody is a writer, or a poet, or whatever he is. Because of such few here and there, we have come today to this state, what we call proudly the 20th century. The space age. And yet, we cannot accept it. Why? Because all these people who have contacted the infinite mind, the mind of God, they know there is mind. But we, who can't see our own self, we are both deaf and blind. We refuse to accept there is mind. So, when we'll talk about the union, we'll talk about the union of the brain and the mind. I am not calling out your individual mind, because when the mind of God flows to you, the infinite divine mind, you pollute it. I will include myself. I and you pollute it. And in that polluted state, it is helpless. It is as good as brain itself. But if it could remain as the mind of God, and if our brain were to unite with it and follow its guidance, that union is the first step, which will lead to the second step, namely the union of the physical body with the astral body. That will lead to the third union, the union of our Vidya with memory. I think in algebra we learned no minus and plus would take away each other. So when avidya and memory will meet, they'll destroy each other. That is the third union, which is a very difficult union. And when you pass to these three different unions, you come to the last one. The union of the outer exterior self with the inner spiritual. So far, all these years, you and I have only heard about something called spiritual self, something called Atma, something called Divine Self. Beyond that, our knowledge is a big zero. And we are going out to bring about this union. With our knowledge, zero. We all are ambitious, I think. We all are ambitious. From zero we want to make infinity, which is also zero. So there is hope. One zero can lead to another zero. The zero of infinity. Why have I talked all these? If you see the second para here, you will read what? Having systematically compiled the sutra and taught his accepted disciples, Sri Patanjali wishes to convey that not only is this the revised text, but the final understanding of yoga for his age. The yoga sutra will thus be finalized and revised in each age, like our modern age, according to the context of that age, because they are scientific, timeless, and have fathomless depths. Years later also people will study Yoga Sutra. 500 years from now they may be able to go from one galaxy to another. Yet all that knowledge is zero. It is avidya. If they have not learned this four unions, they will go from one galaxy to another as much ignorant as ever, because they have not learned what is union. If they will learn this union, sitting in this galaxy, they can reach the next galaxy. And they will not need 500 years of advanced scientific knowledge to build spaceships to stand those feats. Because in the universe, you cannot travel faster than light. And in the universe, if you travel at the speed of light, 200 generations will not cross one galaxy. 200 generations will not cross one galaxy. And the interspace between galaxies. So, for science, it is a dismal future. If they have any hope of traveling in space, the fourth union, you don't travel from galaxy to galaxy. You are here and you are there.